DJ, drop a beat.
Not another podcast.
Not another podcast.
Not another podcast.
Not another podcast.
What the hell is wrong with you people?
Those people are the freaks, man.
Bryce.
Oh my God, who the hell cares?
James.
I am sick and tired of everyone telling me I'm confused.
Big Jim.
I told you. What did I tell you? Didn't I tell you? Because I told you.
Samantha.
I am going to have regular sex with you whether you like it or not.
Not another podcast.
Welcome to Not Another Podcast, the Bryce-free version, as it turns out. I am James, and on Skype with me...
is also James.
Yes!
It's... James of a different girth, a different dimension. We had some reports of Bryce allergies, so we were going to try and do a Bryce-free episode.
Yeah, we're treating him like we would anthrax.
Yes.
With raised devil horns and a lot of moshing.
Oh, yes. A lot of 80s hair, a lot of torn jeans, a lot of, you know,
spiked t-shirts. Spiked bracelets.
Oh, yeah.
And speaking of, Jim, you and I talked about this a while ago, and I think now's the time. I think today we're going to talk about some of our favorite bands. We're going to step away from the travesty that is our world and talk about things that make us happy.
Okay.
And the reason I wanted to do this this week, not only is it because Bryce is gone, but all week I have been listening nonstop to Sabotage.
Nice.
It's in my blood, and you're the only person in the world I know who could appreciate the band as much as I do.
Outside of some kids I knew when I was in like eighth grade and whatnot, and even they were like, they're not bad. I'm like, they're not bad. They're the greatest band that's ever existed.
Ever.
Ever. I first was exposed to Sabotage when I was in elementary school, and I had, like, it was me and my two friends, and one of the guys actually had the cassette tape that I guess his brother or something had given to him, or he stole from his brother, probably the latter of the two.
Jerk.
And we were sitting in his room and smoking cigarettes, because that's what you did when you were in elementary school and you're trying to be cool. And, you know, they got the music going on in the background, and, you know, we're all talking, and I keep kind of like drifting away from them and listening to the music. And, like, dude, are you okay? I'm just like, am I all right? Like, who is this? I never heard any guitar like this before. I never heard any vocals like this before. I didn't say it like that. I wasn't like, you know, like some super intelligent, you know, it's like, dude, these guys sound great. Who are these guys?
The Stephen Hawking of Philadelphia Elementary.
Pre Lou Gehrig's disease.
Still
up and around and, you know, still ambulatory. But my buddy's like, how did he pronounce it? Because I think he was a little dyslexic also. Like Sabotage or Sabotage?
Yeah, I love Sabotage.
Something along those lines. And I'm like, what? Because to me, that didn't even sound really like he was just fucking with me. And he tossed me the cassette tape, which, of course, was what we were listening to, obviously.
Yeah.
To completely date ourselves. And there's a specific, I call it the Sabotage font.
Because your
band wasn't, you know, officially a band unless it had its own font. I really miss that about bands nowadays. Now it all just looks like it was poorly hand sketched with a Sharpie marker, you know, on a napkin or something. Like, there's no real spirit to the font anymore.
Hey, that's how I come up with our logo.
it was with Legos?
Yeah.
The Lego logo?
Our Lego logo.
So I'm looking at the cassette tape, and it was, of course, Hall the Mountain King. And it's got like the picture of the king on his throne, and like I really got into like staring at the picture. I might have been high too, probably not, but I was staring like really in depthly at the background of the picture and all the little, you know, nuances that were in there. And I was just entranced.
Which is hard to do on a cassette because the art was so small.
Yeah,
like you were there with like 16 magnifying glasses and, you know, trying to pick it. To really appreciate the artwork, you needed the album, the vinyl.
Yeah. Which I don't think any of us were quite that savvy at the time. We were just
God, no.
For quick and ease, for the most part. So, so eventually my buddy, Matt, who was the one that originally had the cassette tape, gave it to my other buddy, Jeremy, like right in front of me. Like, I'm clearly the one that's like over the fucking moon about this band. This band is fucking crazy awesome.
And that's why they did it.
And probably just to torture me or whatever. And so I then, like, whenever I would go over to Jeremy's house, like, it was a reason to hang out, was I wanted to listen to that fucking tape. And I finally got on Jeremy's nerves enough where he finally just gave me this wore-out tape that I proceeded to completely wear out, to the point where at one point the tape was eaten by the cassette tape player. I had, these are problems that kids nowadays have no fucking clue about.
No.
I had to delicately, like a fucking, like a surgeon, like a gemologist or a clocksmith, I had to delicately remove the fragile tape from the inner workings of my boombox. And then when it cuts in two, you think, well, then that's it, you're screwed. No, no, no. The savvy, the very broke, audiophile will then take a very thin, very small piece of tape, and you can actually
tape.
You can actually tape your tapes back together. And this was like a thing that took me, like, I think about the better part of a week, because I got like the tape and everything just the way I wanted it to. Finally got the two pieces together, and then you have to figure out how this thing serpentines through the cassette tape itself to get it back together. And then once I got it back together, I then had to tape the outer part of the tape. Like, this thing was rickety rick by the time I was done with it. And not all the songs sounded the exact same, you know, as they did once upon a time.
For some reason, Hall of the Mountain King went into White Witch. It was weird.
Yeah. So, but no, I love the band from the jump. And, you know, after that, after I started, like, you know, getting a job and working my own, making my own money and everything else, I would go to cassette stores and, like, you know, Tower Records or wherever I could. And I would find... because I wanted to have all the albums. I wanted to have all of the Sabotage catalog, if you will. And I was pretty solid up until, I think, the Wake of the Magellan. I think that's the last album that I bought on cassette tape. I still have, like, almost all of them in my little cheesy attaché case that's filled with cassette tapes.
Yeah, we talked about that after you moved there and you found it all and how glorious it was.
Oh, yes.
I did not have quite such a social discovery of Sabotage. Back in 1990, my parents moved us to Newport, Oregon. Mm-hmm. And for the very first time, we had cable.
Ooh.
And with cable came MTV. And with MTV on Saturday nights came Headbangers Ball.
With Ricky Rackman.
No, this was actually before Rackman. I forget the dude's name, but he was like the total milk toast, feathered hair.
Oh, the guy looked like he was more at home at a Duran Duran concert than he would be at like an Anthrax concert. Okay,
yeah, that guy.
I think it's Adam.
Clearly a Winger fan.
You like girls that are only 17? Okay, you're going to prison.
Yeah, so this was literally when the first time I watched it, it was like 6 months before Rackman took over. And when Rackman took over, that was when it got good.
Yeah.
So buried in the show, like within the third hour of the show, they played a video that just blew my fucking mind. And it was Sabotage's Gutter Ballet. It was the first time in my memory I had heard heavy metal with classical music, which to anyone who knows heavy metal knows it really has its roots in classical music.
Yeah. And any band with a guitarist worth their salt is a classically trained guitarist. Like, you know, they learn, like, how could they possibly know to create those notes and those progressions, if you will. You do that by going back and learning it from the masters, learning it from the bottom up, not just like your basic, you know, A through G scale or wherever the fuck a guitar works. I don't know. You learn it by going back and doing your homework. And so any band nowadays that, you know, sounds incredible, odds are classically trained.
Or at least has an appreciation for classical masters.
Yeah.
And so that song really resonated with me. The lyrics were great, the use of piano in a serious heavy metal song. And then again, I guess it's the chorus. It's not really the chorus. It's kind of the breakdown between the chorus and the next verse. I'm totally blanking on what it's called. It's not a bridge. But it's this whole thing where you've got a string orchestra with heavy metal guitars doing this amazing bit of music. And that stuck with me. And so the very next day, I ran to our local Fred Meyer's and picked up Gutter Ballet. And that album from start to beginning was epic.
From start to beginning?
Yes. Wow. Yes. Because that's all I could get through. Because
you started, then you went all the way through to the end, and then you started it again. So from start to the beginning to the... Yeah, it's an alpha and omega kind of a thing. There is no end.
It's the circle of life.
There's just there's the gutter, and it's a ballet, and it's a masterpiece.
But I wore out the song Gutter Ballet pretty quickly. Gutter Ballet, and then I flipped it over to listen to whatever song was on because I didn't want to waste my batteries rewinding.
Again.
So Gutter Ballet, the end of Hounds.
They'll never know about. Well, I could either waste the rest of these double A's rewinding it back, and then you had to sort of figure out where the end of the song was. Or,
yeah, you had to time the rewind just perfectly.
Exactly.
And depending on how strong your batteries were, depended on how fast the rewind went.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of math that was involved in music back then. I mean, nowadays it's just like, just hit the track back button or, you know, just hit it up.
Exactly,
put it over.
Yeah.
Like, you don't understand.
So Gutter Ballet and Summer's Rain and parts of Hounds totally wore out. And not unlike you, I had many an incident where the cassette player tried to eat the cassette.
Yeah.
And by the time I moved up to CD, my Gutter Ballet CD or cassette just sounded like a warbled, garbled mess.
Yeah.
I did actually. So, and not unlike you, I went out and bought everything they had. Like a few weeks later, just every Sabotage CD I could find. And just their early stuff at the time, the early stuff was beneath me. I was like, they were not good then.
What? Power of the Night wasn't a good album?
I have come to appreciate that album in many ways, but for me at the time, from Hall of the Mountain King forward, it was their first few albums, they were trying to be like everyone else. Like, they hadn't really discovered their voice.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But the writing on Hall of the Mountain King, it's like they sat down and went, you know what, we're completely being buried by every other band. There's nothing that makes us stand out. So, and I know both John and Chris, the brothers in the band, had classical music in their background, like we were discussing earlier. So I think their love for classical music, they kind of went, why don't we just kind of embrace this? And it really shows on Hall of the Mountain King and everything moving forward, because you can tell in just the way they structure their songs, they're going for something bigger and broader than just your typical power of the night.
That was sadly a very accurate
really
depiction
was.
Of that song. Even like the album cover, the whole thing looks like it was made over a weekend, and not because they were rushed for time of this, because this was the maximum effort that they could sort of put into creating an album. Like, okay, we want to blend in, we want to be a fucking chameleon, we want to be just like every other band that's out there. Let's put out.
Well, and people will say, like, you know, oh, the 80s. When people are talking about the 80s, they're usually talking about the latter half of the 80s, from, I would say, like 86 through 89.
Yeah.
But people forget that the early 80s was probably the worst. And all you got to do is look at the album covers for heavy metal bands from like 80 to 86. They're just got the Power of the Night album was a fist through glass.
Yeah. I mean but
that leather fingerless glove with the spikes on the knuckles punching through glass. Power of the Night.
But you got to think them sitting around trying to decide what the album's going to look like, you know, because it's you got to put your mind back into that of the 80s. You know, back when that sort of thing was so cool, and metal was just emerging, like the meteor had just fallen to Earth and cracked open. I mean, there was some hard rocking stuff in the 70s, but like the 80s was really where, like, okay, we've got the sound, now let's make it scary as fuck, or try to make it scary as fuck, because that's what kids liked back then. They wanted to be entertained and also terrified by these bands. So
well, and you look at, and we're talking about Sabotage here, but look at some of the early Judas Priest covers.
Oh, yeah.
They're fucking god awful. I mean, the cover for Turbo Lover is like this swirling fucking Nagel art fist grabbing, I think it's a torch. How does that relate to Turbo?
Well,
like, I would have done, like, a car.
Knowing what we know...
Like, the most...
Knowing what we know now about, you know, the band. I don't think it was a torch that he was grabbing. I think it was something along that line of shape. Probably on another gentleman. I'm not at liberty to say one way or another. You know, as a, no longer am I the legal representation of the band, so I can't really speak for them. But, yeah, it's... You know, and then you have, like, other stuff like Manowar and...
Oh, my God. The most fucking homoerotic album covers ever.
You know?
It's always shirtless barbarians standing together with raised fists.
Yeah.
Oiled up.
They're not like, hey, let's go find some chicks either. Like, they, you don't open up like, oh, they were getting, you know, motivated to go and find some ladies for the night. No, they were... They were probably going to stay in the company of other men for the majority of this, you know, hour and a half long album that they just put out.
Flexing and applying more oil.
Well, they don't want their battle axes to dry out. That would just be a travesty.
And everyone knows the best way to oil up your battle axe is to rub it across your oily, sweaty chest.
If you're
chest.
A man, yeah. If you're a metal man. Made of the metal, by the metal.
But even fucking like, okay, like the most epic album cover I can think of from the early 80s is got to be Dio's Holy Diver. That is the first album cover I can remember for a heavy metal band looking pretty goddamn epic, with the fucking Dio demon throwing the priest into the water.
Oh yeah I mean,
That was some great artwork.
You know, with...
And then you compare that to anything by Manowar, and you go, how did these guys sell albums outside of San Francisco?
You know, and we were more naive back then. You know, Turbo Lover, you know, didn't necessarily mean, like, you know, this guy really loves to drive fast. I'm like, well, there's a stick shift involved, but I don't think it's more of a... It is a manual transmission. But, you know, emphasis on the man, not so much on the car. For me, it would be anything by Iron Maiden. Because some bands adopted, technically a mascot for their album covers. And Eddie, to me, I'm just like... And they would think the fact that he was so interchangeable, that they would put him in a different situations.
Well, the paintings were always great with Iron Maiden, starting from Number of the Beast. The album before, I mean, he looked scary, but not – like, they really perfected it over the next few albums, what Eddie looked like. And you're right. He was so versatile. Like, every album cover, it was, like, really reflective of the band. One of my favorites, speaking of Iron Maiden, was the Somewhere in Time album, because the band, that was the first time the band actually showed up on the cover. On the flip side of the cover, there's all five members of the band painted in. And that was pretty damn cool. But even their artwork, like outside, like their artwork for the singles and stuff. And again, this is for me, the Somewhere in Time album was my first Iron Maiden album, and I bought it because of that cover.
Though, and one of the few situations where you could judge the quality of the album by the awesomeness of the album cover.
And you would be correct.
Again, like you said, with Manowar and other bands out there, it was really kind of a hit or miss situation. Growing up in Pennsylvania, in Pennsylvania Dutch country, I knew of other metalheads, but I hadn't kind of, you know, earned my steel, as it were, yet. I had you had to kind of know the you had to know the talk before you could, you know, hang out with these guys. And I think I talked about this before, but I've went through a very odd phase musically before I got to metal. And, because with me, it started with, my listening to what my sister was listening to, which was like all new wavy and Duran Duran and stuff like that. And then actually before that, it was like what my mom was listening to, which was like big band and Glenn Miller and stuff like that. Like it's really old fucking like stuff you would see in a black and white reel from like Dayline, America's Storms Normandy. Our boys are on the
beach.
I hear that song so many fucking times. And then on the flip side of that, with my dad, mostly what he would be listening to would be soundtracks to Broadway musicals, because he's working on being another production of, something. So there was always like just a countless number of those available. And then from there, I morphed into what my sister was listening to. And then started to develop my own flavor. One of the first albums I was ever given was Toto, their self-titled album. And I thought that was kind of...
Ain't nothing wrong with Toto, brother.
It is when you think that this is some heavy stuff. Like, no, it's not. Not really.
I will defend Toto because I am a fan of Toto. I've come to really appreciate the musicians that make...
Oh, yeah, I'm not taking anything away from
them. I will also say they've had a lot of garbage. And I one of my best friends is like a hardcore Toto fan, and I think he would even agree they had some garbage. But the songs that stand out on the albums, each progressive album, are really, really well written. And you got to think that for the most part, I think, if I'm not mistaken, Toto was pretty much made up of session musicians who were tired of being in the background and not getting the credit due. And especially guitarist Steve Lukather, who, if you look at his catalog of work, you would be amazed at how many times you've heard him on an album and didn't know it was him. Both Thriller and Bad from Michael Jackson, all the guitar work on that is Steve Lukather, with the exception of the solo for Beat It, which is obviously Eddie Van Halen, who Steve convinced Michael to bring in.
Wow.
And then on the Bad album, Dirty Diana, that is Billy Idol's guitar player, Steve Stevens. Yeah. And you know that because he's using the same effect that he used on Rebel Yell, he uses on Dirty Diana. Which, interesting side note, that really cool effect, and you know it when you hear it, is a toy laser gun.
Really?
Yeah, he somehow hooks it into his guitar, into his amplifier, like his guitar goes through it, and then it goes through. And it's just this really cool little effect he does on his guitar that's just a toy laser gun. it's fucking epic.
Well, and, like we were saying, too, with the just the immersion of metal in the 80s, because the groundwork was so wide open, you could go anywhere you wanted to with it, really, and kind of stake your own claim. People would get as creative as they could possibly be and throw whatever they could against the wall to see what sticks. And, things along those lines of, using a toy gun or whatever, in the sound effects department obviously would be something that would kind of start to emerge. I'm looking now at some an 80s heavy metal album covers on Google image search, and man, there are some classics here. Molly Hatchet for one. Now, Molly Hatchet utilized this guy was an artist before Molly Hatchet got a hold of him, I believe. Like, and it was very much that same kind of medieval style of, like, you know, it is always almost always a barbarian, bare chested, you know, muscles are rippling.
Yeah, yeah.
I know this because at a yard sale that I was at once with my dad, there was a painting. I guess it was a painting. Or a reproduction of a painting of one of those things where it was a barbarian with his axe drawn, ready for battle, and there was some kind of, you know, weird otherworldly monster that was, you know, attacking. I think it was like a big giant battle cat of some sort. And he's about ready to throw down with this animal, and behind him is a bare-chested woman who's like, oh, thank goodness you arrived when you did, my bosoms were exposed and everything else. And I, you know, easily talked by him. Like, can I get this? He's like, yes, get that. And so it was like a nickel or something at a yard sale. And so that hung in my room proudly for a number of years. Dad's like, yep, son's not gay. All right, good to know. Only cost me a nickel to find out, guys. Only cost me a nickel. So, but yeah, no, the...
Oh, God, dude. I did the Google image search for 80s album covers. One of the first ones that came up was the soundtrack for Trick or Treat. Oh, yeah. With the fucking burning jack-o'-lantern and Sammy Kerr.
R.I.P., bro.
May he rest in peace.
Yeah, no, within the first couple of swathings, I found, of course, Man of War, which actually did have several bound women at their feet, which they're doing nothing to rescue, merely standing over them looking triumphant.
No, no.
And of course, again, there's plenty of Iron Maiden to go around. You know, with number of the.
I got one here for a band called Battleaxe.
The Harley with the spikes all over.
Like,
yeah.
Yes, you're looking at the same one. This looks like it was drawn by a.
Yeah.
I would say an eighth grader. With colored
maybe
pencil.
A freshman in high school during it's study hall awful. And he thought it was like the shit, and like to the point where he's like, I'm gonna make a band called Battleaxe and just so we have a place to put this as our album cover. Oh my God, that is some cheesy shit there.
Okay, a pretty epic one though. I don't know if you're seeing this one. Let's too see, but the band Grim Reaper.
Oh, God, yeah.
Now, that's a scary goddamn album cover.
Oh, dude, yeah. That's a pretty wicked-looking scythe, too. And is it some kind of wounded barbarian lays at the Reaper's feet? And apparently the Grim Reaper has a road flare for some reason.
Yeah, well, you know, he's safe. Yeah, he's letting other people
just,
know there
just
was
claiming
an accident
a soul.
So they
nothing
can go
to see
around.
Here. Keep driving. Do you think you figure the master of death and life itself would have pretty good night vision? I mean, granted, there's no eyeballs in the sockets, so why even really need to have a reason to reflect light? I don't know.
No, the Grim Reaper uses flashlights, and well, nowadays he's got night vision goggles, but.
So, yeah, your options were back then to go as scary as possible, which some of these, I mean, some of these still stand up. Some of these are still, again, like I said, anything from Ozzy or Iron Maiden always rings true. But the other route to go would be to be as borderline pornographic as you could be just to get someone's attention.
Oh, you mean like this album here from, who is it, Metal MC, Born to Party, with the chick, the scantily clad chick straddling
Harley
Davidson?
With the what looks like, Jesus, who is, and like there's a guy who clearly is not into metal at all. He's all contorted.
No.
And he's got a pool ball in his mouth. He's got a feather boa around his neck. His legs behind his head. No. This guy sucks
nothing
his own
gay
balls,
about this.
Clearly. I mean, it's on the cover. But then if you kind of scroll down from there in that grouping, you have, what is it? Oh, Hanoi Rocks. There we go. Which was, I mean, they went for something, you know, and there was always a lot to be said for if you go the basic route, where it's just the band looking, you know, pissed or, you know, underpaid and overworked.
Or trying to look cool. Because I, like, one of the, and I love the music of this band, but as I'm looking at the cover right now, I realize how fucking gay it is.
Oh, yeah.
And that's Cinderella's Night Songs. I mean, say what you will. The band was a really great band. And their second album cover went completely against the grain of heavy metal. Because, again, 80s, it was, you know, black cover, artwork. No, Cinderella's second album was a stark white cover with the logo on it, and that was it. It was the Long Cold Winter album, and that was that was pretty daring. But Night Songs, it's clearly four guys trying to look cool, getting ready to either look for Johns or get chicks. I'm not sure which. But Tom Kiefer is doing the double thumbs up.
Which, I mean, when it comes to, of all the heavy metal hand and figure gestures, one thumbs up, bad enough. Double thumbs, you might as well just have them chopped off. You know, it's you got to have the horns, and that's it. That's the only thing. I mean, you might be able to get away with, like, a hang loose where it's just the pinky and the thumb, but that's only if your pointer finger has been chopped off or bit off by a fan, a rabid fan.
Yeah. Well, and then going back to, I don't know how this became a breakdown of heavy metal album covers, but going back to scary, Megadeth had some really scary album covers in the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
The album cover for Peace Sells.
Oh, again, what was their mascot called?
Vic Rattlebone.
Vic Rattlebone. Because, I mean, if anyone that knows anything about Megadeth knows that, much like Iron Maiden, they had that ongoing theme of taking this very terrifying looking character. They almost look related, Vic and Eddie did.
Vic is an older Eddie. All the muscle has rotted away, and he's just skeleton. And then he's got the riveted in visor over his eyes. And
so basically what we can amass from Vic is obviously he has like a bad Medicare or Medicaid package that basically results in. Yes.
Long before the Affordable Care Act.
We could either help repair your eyes or actually at your age, probably best if we just weld this visor on your head. Yeah. Oh, geez. Or maybe future Geordi. Like, this is how Geordi ends up. Like, he gets sent into an alternate dimension where he needs to process metal to survive. And after many centuries of being force-fed nothing but metal, turns into Vic Rattlebones. God. I'm looking at right now at quite possibly the most hilariously bad metal ever by the band. You might know them. Attila. It is 30 of the worst
Attila,
heavy metal album covers of all time. But if you go Google image search, you just type in Attila. It's two dudes, which, I mean, then begs the question, which one's Attila? But it's the two of them. They're standing, and they've got what can only be described as Dollar Tree Renaissance Fair garb on. They're holding helmets, not wearing them, but holding them.
Oh,
respectfully,
God, no.
So that they're
holding helmets, not wearing them, but holding them.
Of course.
I just typed in worst heavy metal
covers.
This
one's down a little ways, but
Manowar showed up.
Yeah, let me know when you see it, because I don't want to give away anything else that's in the background, because
okay, I'm looking
it
for
took
it
me
now.
A second to kind of process what it was I was looking at.
You know, some of these, I'm seeing, like, worst heavy metal cover, you know, and some of these are pretty damn good. I don't know how they're...
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Like, for instance, Danzig's first album, that's a pretty awesome album cover. Okay, most of these I can agree with, but there's some, like Iron Maiden's Peace of Mind, that should not be on here.
Okay, so...
Okay, I can't find Attila here, so keep describing.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah,
Rainbow, I can see how that could be on here. Just, oh, there, oh, no, that's not it. That's just...
Well, Attila seems to be standing in, I guess, a dried meat locker. Because there's like nothing but hanks of beef that have been, you know, cut up and strung up around them. Not in any kind of like a foreboding way. More like, you know, if Attila had their own brand of, you know, steaks, like preserved steaks that you could buy at the concert. Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're so metal they cut themselves.
Oh, Attila steaks, they're fantastic. They're the best steaks. Everyone says so.
Now, the floor to me does not seem like the cleanest.
Oh, okay, I found it. Yeah,
looks
here it is.
Kind of sawdusty.
Oh, my God.
But, yeah, but you see, this doesn't really, to me, promote a metal band. It seems like
they
might be selling something else. Yeah, the Hall & Oates style.
Well, what really stands out to me is the one dude's mustache.
oh,
that is so awful.
Now looking back through to some other
that
ones,
just
Dokken.
Horrendous.
Dokken was the band.
Yeah. Dokken had terrible album covers.
I'm looking back through some of these, and I actually bought these albums from the most metal store of all, Kmart. Once upon a time, whenever I would get my my Christmas money or my birthday money or my gift cards or whatever, and I would go there, try and get the most metal for my buck.
Oh, dude. look at the album cover for the band Manila Road Spiral Castle. It's a barbarian killing what looks like a couple of orcs, and there's a rainbow.
Manila Road?
I want to listen to this album. Manila Road. Oh, fuck. Yeah, you can just tell, like, you can kind of tell by the album cover how the band thought of itself. Like, the more epic the album cover, or rather, more epic the album cover tried to be, like, the band was really on a high or a low. Because I've seen two albums from Crocus.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. And they are just, like, one, the photography is, like, it looks like someone's ring. It's like a steel skull and crossbones. Like a chrome. And then the next one is just like this really, like, let's get a teenage girl to paint us a heart.
You know, and then you got bands
with
like
lightning bolts
Cannibal
in
Corpse,
it.
Where already you know if you're going to be looking at the album cover for a band Cannibal Corpse, it's going to be some disturbing shit. And they never fail to disappoint. I can honestly say there are some Cannibal Corpse songs that I didn't hate back then. You know, I didn't go out of my way to listen to them, but you know, it was definitely one of those things where I would go after the album more for the cover art than anything else. And then, because it's a slippery slope back then, because you'd have some that like the album cover looks so intricate or so bizarre that you're like, okay, I had to check out the sound and see what's on here. And you put it on, you're like, oh, this is just garbage. Like, these obviously spent all their money on the art and left nothing behind for the actual content of music. Ah, Sepultura.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I will say there are I would agree with that, but then you get albums, and because of our love of Sabotage, it made me kind of check this guy out, and I was never super disappointed, but again, album per album, song for song, it was always hit or miss. He would have just amazing songs, and then the rest of the album is just garbage. And that was Yngwie Malmsteen. And the cover for Trilogy, the album Trilogy, is Yngwie doing one of his cool guitar poses, shooting fire out of his guitar to stop a three-headed dragon descending from the heavens. That is metal right there. And I will tell you, having listened to that album...
Is it the last song? Is it the fucking closing credits?
Good song on it. No, I will say, though, that song is pretty good. I mean, Yngwie's one of those guys that just grew up in classical music and just took it to the next level. But the song You Don't Remember, I'll Never Forget is amazing. And he should have just released it as a single and then started work on the next
single.
Oh, man,
there's some classics.
Because it's just terrible. And here's another good one that I know, like, I would probably never listen to this band. The band Wrathchild. It's three bleach blonde dudes in head-to-toe leather standing in front of... Well, there's a lot of smoke on the ground. I don't know what they're standing in front of, but they're doing the metal poses. Like, one guy's trying to be sexy and allure, leaning over, like, hey, girls. And then there's one guy... Oh, I didn't even notice. There's three blondes, and then there's a brunette who's kneeling in
there's
front
of the blondes. There were some artists that...
I can't get it to open
just,
it.
Were full of themselves,
closer.
You could tell, that they create the... They were trying to go for the whole package themselves. I'm looking at a guy by the name of Kane Roberts.
Yeah. Oh, dude, okay. Kane had a couple good songs. Plus, he had the credit from playing guitar for Alice Cooper. I've heard both of his albums.
Oh yeah,
he really should have because part of his claim to fame is he was a bodybuilder as well as a heavy metal guitarist.
So I remember
he
the first
just
time
stayed
I
in
saw
the gym
a Rambo
and left the guitar
movie.
At home.
And,
I know the album you're about to
I was like,
talk
okay,
about.
Well, this is an interesting conversation or what do they call that? Commentary on a bygone era wherein veterans were looked down upon and viewed as vagabonds. They didn't want them in their town. Renegades, if you will. And so I took it away from it as that, you know, and I was like, okay, well, I'll do my best then to kind of be understanding. Yeah. Kane apparently saw Rambo and was like, I want to be John fucking Rambo. But John Rambo, if he played a bizarre electric guitar that looked like it was a... oh, hold on, I'm getting a phone call here. Looks like an AK-47.
It's the worst. It really is the worst. Yeah. And he's all, again, he's all oiled up. Like, he was a failed guitar player for Manowar. Did I lose you? Oh, crap. I think I've lost Jim. Hello, hello, Jim, are you there? Well, this awkward silence brought to you by Jim's terrible phone and whoever called him. Oh, hey, video. I am now seeing video, flashes of video, of Jim's glorious face, and it's flashing on and off. Jim, just take off the video and talk to me. Are you there? Worst podcast ever. Oh. This is great. Oh, and Jim just hung up. Hopefully Jim will call back and we can continue this fantastic discussion. I will probably cut all of this fun stuff out. Hey.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey.
Hey, we've gained you back.
Yeah, I got a phone call come in. I tried to, refuse it. And in doing so, I wiped out pretty much everything. So now I had to fucking Skype you back.
Well, I kept the show going with some interesting tales of awkwardness.
Oh.
And I'm half tempted to leave it all in because it's just me going, do-do-do, la-la-la. It's just the worst. I think I might just leave it in just for fuck's sake. Who gives a shit? I'm just in the description. Listen to James flail while trying to get Jim back on the phone.
Yeah, fuck it. Leave it in.
Yeah. Who cares? It's just awful.
So do you want to do a couple more minutes and then wrap it up?
Yeah, we got like 15 minutes left. Because I did want to touch on another band that we loved, and that is Blind Guardian.
Oh, yes.
And you want to talk about epic album covers. I mean, theirs were always just
without
amazing.
Doubt, yeah.
But and these are the two bands that Jim and I became friends over. The two bands we bonded over. And Jim, I think you remember better than I how the topic came up.
It was, near as I can remember, you were board hopping. I was running around doing my thing. And I forget specifically. I think maybe one of us threw out like a lyric to one of their songs. And like probably the Bard song or something like that. And I'm like, the other one's just like, Blind Guardian. Yeah. And it was just simply like, yeah. You know, our reaction to it was basically like, you know, yeah, I know Blind Guardian. Why doesn't everybody know about this fucking band?
We drew swords.
Yes.
Raised them.
Our graphite blades to the sky, glinting in the noonday sun, blood dripping from them. You know, and what I loved, well, okay, so for me, my first exposure came through my exchange student, Luis, from Spain, who I very much do truly miss. I miss the guy. He's awesome. He introduced me to a lot of awesome music, not just metal based, but like a bunch of, I don't know if it wasn't really be considered. I don't know. It was electronic. It was electronica, but like early on, like we're talking about like the mid 90s. So back in that era, but it was all like, you know, in Europe and, he showed me a bunch of really cool stuff that, you know, is from his homeland or just from Europe. That's not just fucking American, which I loved. He had this tape that he played. We would play it while, we would do the Middle Earth version of Dungeons and Dragons, of course, like, you know, two heterosexual, you know, virile high school kids would. Juniors, by the way. So there should have been parties for us to go to. Yeah, no, we're going to hang out at home after homework's done and keep the campaign going. I remember in my campaign, I had an elf, a forest elf whose name was Miyagi-Do. From the Karate Kid, Miyagi-Do karate. And he, I had him in a barbarian. that was also in my group. But the Barbarian, not the Barbarian, not a Barbarian. What the fuck was he? I don't know. Anyway, we're getting far off topic here. Luis, like, really loved D&D. He had, like, a sweet set of dice, plenty of graph paper, like, you know, a good nerd does. And even though English was not his primary language, he spoke it very well, and he was a very compelling DM or dungeon master. And so we would get immersed in this whole thing, and to sort of further set the mood in the background, we would he had, like, music cues that he would set up, which I thought was pretty adventurous. And a lot of the times it would be Blind Guardian, and I would be, like, so caught up in that that would kind of distract me for a while. And so we talked about – you told me all about Blind Guardian, how huge they were in Europe. And I'm like – it blew my mind to think that there was, like, popular music that existed outside of the United States, which I knew that, you know, would some bands would come from overseas, you know, and they become popular here as well. But I thought that, you know – there was American bands, and then there was, like, these few scattered, tiny little, like, you know, blips. England, they had, like, the Stones, the Beatles. That's about it. You know, and Canada had Rush, and that's about it. Like, if it wasn't American music, if it wasn't American popular music, then it wasn't really, you know, that I thought that there was nothing really else out there. And he's like, oh, no, 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 there's actually this whole other universe of popular music out there. And so we would, you know, look into various – we would play games, listen to Blind Guardian. And on my own, I would go out and I would try and find them, but it was very difficult to find them here in the States. And so when Luis went back to Spain, he sent me a care package that had, like, two albums in it. Actually, no, I think my mom had him send them back for, like, my birthday or Christmas or something like that. And it blew my mind. Because, like, you couldn't find them anywhere here in America. And one was a live album, and another one was, oh, God, Imaginations, I think.
Yeah. Imaginations from the Other Side.
I think that it was that one and a live one. And, like you said, the cover art was, I swear to God, it was right out of, like, a Tolkien's books. I mean, they were very heavily influenced, not just by Lord of the Rings, but also by King Arthur, and just that whole era. And, like, to see a sea of people singing along to their music, and obviously every bit as much in love with that era and that time as I was just like, God, I would give anything to be able to be at one of their concerts. It was just like, to me, it was like something I needed, I had to do before I died, was to see Blind Guardian live in concert. Even though I couldn't understand a fucking word. They all speak German, except for their lyrics, which are in English. But it's like broken English, but I still love, like, I don't know. It's a very weird, you know, you really have to truly love the music to be able to appreciate Blind Guardian, unless you can also speak German and understand what the fuck they're saying.
No, it's funny because when we bonded, I had only just discovered Blind Guardian, like within the last 3 months before that time. And I had just completely fallen in love with the music. And of course, that was about the time that the Lord of the Rings movies had come out. So it really tied in, but the imagery they wove with their lyrics and just the music on top of it, it was amazing to me, and I was angry that I had not known of them sooner. Growing up, and getting back to what you said about being able to find albums, I think that's a regional thing. Because there were, growing up, I remember seeing Blind Guardian albums, but those were what the real heavy metal kids, the scary kids, listened to, so yeah. I didn't really bother with it. At the time, when I was first getting into metal, I had a really weird musical journey. Not unlike yours, like I started out like with a lot of pop music, and there was a point in seventh grade, I believe, that I could have gone more hip hop in my musical enjoyment, because there were some really cool hip hop bands. And. And like many seventh grade kids in the 80s, I was really into breakdancing.
Really
couldn't
into
do it.
It.
But I really
yeah, no, I kind of went the opposite route where I went from rap into metal. So,
Well, that's kind of like, I mean, that was on the verge. Like, I was leaning more towards rap and hip hop, but then Poison's Look What the Cat Dragged In and Def Leppard's Hysteria came out, yeah, like 1-2 punch. And those two albums led me into, you know, like other stuff. And I had a deep-seated love for Kiss. When I was 3 years old, Kiss had a televised concert, and that always stuck with me. So I think there was metal in me, even though it was buried deep down, much to my mother's pleasure, until I turned like 13, 14, and it just all erupted.
Well, and rap and metal and then, back then, too, were at odds with each other. Like, you were definitely on one side of the fence or the other. There was no middle ground. That didn't come until much later. Even though, I don't know what year Walk This Way came out, but that was really the first crossover between,
86, and 1986.
People were just like, well, shit, man, if it can go together like this, then why the fuck not, man? And that kind of...
Yeah, but it was still years before.
It was acceptable.
You know, I mean, that was kind of like a one-off deal. It's like only Aerosmith and Run DMC could do it, you know. And I think the reason that it works is because rap did get real. It got hardcore because up until that time, you listen to rap bands up until, I'll say it, NWA, it was all really lovey-dovey, you know, fuzzy, and, you know, it wasn't real. And I think that if you asked any rap artist, they would say that rap really did get real with NWA and beyond. Because without NWA, you don't get Public Enemy, you don't get Tupac, you don't get any of that stuff.
There's obviously like LL Cool J and Kumul D and solo guys doing their own thing. But it was all about like kind of, and with LL Cool J specifically, he could do both. He could do like the power ballads. He could do the songs that would get you pumped up and ready to go. People forget. I mean, people only see him now. And again, kids nowadays only see this. We're going to start a segment. Just, you know, crotchety Jim's kids these days.
Well, that's good because Bryce is so much younger than us.
You know, like, there was a time in which, you know, if you utter the words LL Cool J, immediately what leapt to mind was this dude that was built like a brick shit house, white Kangol, no shirt, jeans, and like, you know, girl and gold chains and girls on both arms. And, you know, he has a song where he's like, I'm the pinnacle. That means I reign supreme and I'm notorious. I'll crush you like a jelly bean. Like it to me, that seemed almost silly, but like he pulled it off in such a way where you're like, you would never dare question, LL. I mean, he was it. And he even did a song on one of his albums that, like, it's all about him going to, like, Looney Tunes, like, going into a cartoon. And then, I shit you not, man, it is the craziest thing. And it's basically LL Cool J, and he's, like, talking about rapping with the Flintstones and Mickey Mouse and shit. It is the most surreal shit ever, but he makes it work. And it's obviously it's buried on like a B-side of an album that, you know, maybe has a song that's so great that you'll never be like, I wonder what the rest of these songs sound like, kind of a thing. But
what actually solidified metal for me, like metal being my music of choice all through high school and you know, my youth, Guns N' Roses, nice. Appetite for Destruction. That album, just like, this is that. Like, the feeling I got listening to that album, just, like, all that anger and rage that teenagers feel, like, that album just, like, made it okay. You know, for me, it was like, I'm normal. Yeah. You know? And, of course, that was my gateway drug into bands like Metallica and Iron Maiden, like, all of that stuff. You know? So, I mean, yeah, that was for me. And I'm still, like, even now, people... Yeah, I talk to, you know, friends that I went to high school with, and everyone's kind of like, oh, this is the only music I listen to now. I'm like, fuck no. There's always new stuff coming out. There's always stuff that is getting my attention. And I don't want to be tied down. Like, I don't want to be that old guy that only listens to the music of my youth. And that's when music was music, because music is always evolving. It's always changing.
The moment you sit back and say, you know, Well, the only music I listen to now is the moment you've officially turned into your parents. And that's the moment when you're just like, you know, I don't understand this new music. It's stupid. It's dumb. There's no place for it. It's all just a fad. And I'm just like, man, you are echoing a statement that has begun since, you know, the first, you know, caveman beat his battle axe against a rotten log and another, or his oily chest.
Or his oily chest.
You know, and another barbarian came by and said, ugh, sound good. More like that, please. And like, you know, an older barbarian come by like, that no sound good. Me no sound good. You know, sound nowadays different from my sound. My sound like big explosion in sky. You know, dinosaurs scream at each other. That was good music. This music no good. This music just weird and slimy.
I will, as we wrap this up, I will recommend for you, if you get a chance on YouTube, check out, I'm not sure if it's a channel, but if you type in old people react to, and one of the funniest ones is old people to Slipknot. Dude, the reactions are, for the most part, as you would expect, but there's a couple of the old guys that are like, this is pretty all right. I'm like, what?
Yeah, I think it might be a BuzzFeed because they do a lot of those, you know, insert blank, reacts to, insert blank.
My favorite ones are kids react to. Kids react to Metallica. I
Except
just
for one kid. There's one kid in there that I'm just like.
Yeah, there's one kid like, just, I like
There's
this.
Hope for tomorrow.
This
there's hope for the youth. If kids, if metal can still reach in into a young kid's imagination and spark that little fire that hopefully they don't use to set an actual fire and then burn down like a fucking apartment building, which is what people believe that heavy metal did back then. It's so hilarious that like, an kids, they listen to their devil music and they worship Satan. Like, no, we mostly would just listen to devil music and, you know, that's about it. Like sit around and smoke cigarettes and do the same thing that everybody else, you know, all the other kids were doing, only, you know, wearing a lot more black and, you know, acid wash.
That might be, you know, we might have to table that for a later show on the misconceptions of metalheads. A lot of the conceptions were true, but more often than not, I think they were false. So we might have to talk about that. And I think Bryce would be, because I think Bryce went through as a youth. So maybe we could talk about that next week. Jim, as always, it was a pleasure.
Absolutely. Yes. You know, I'm still dealing with whenever you have a small child, it's always a constant battle of, you know, who gets to hold the cold or the flu. And I'm actually still sick. My right ear is actually completely closed off. It sounds like it's underwater. So I got everything going through my left ear right now, and I've taken like 3 days off of work because for the first couple of days, once my ear shut off, I couldn't stand without like getting tipsy. Like it was really weird sensation when your inner ear gets all fucked up like that. And so hopefully by next week I'll be 100% on the mend. We have Bryce back.
As far as I know, we will have Bryce back. He and his lady are taking some time out of town in preparation, and I imagine we'll see this a lot more because fatherhood is looming for him.
Yep. So and, God bless him.
I think we're gonna have to grill him next week too a little bit and find out like how he is preparing, what steps. I don't know if you heard last week's show, but they had gone to a birthing class and someone tried to break into his car.
Interesting. No, I gotta listen back on that. But yeah, we get to question Bryce then, what types of music does he hope his kid's going to listen to? And what types of music is he terrified his kid's going to listen to?
Oh, those are good questions. I'm going to write those down Smurfly. So we make sure and ask him. Because I know his favorite music. I know his wife's favorite music. And I know that's what the kid will grow up with. And typically in your teens, you rebel and you listen to the exact opposite.
Only time shall tell. Poor Bryce.
Only time shall tell. Jim,
later.
Pleasure to talk to you. We'll talk to you next week. Later.
Thank you for listening to Not Another Podcast. There are so many places for you to find us outside of www.notanotherpodcast.com. For instance, you can find us on Facebook at Not Another Podcast. You can also find us on Tumblr at www.notanotherpodcast.tumblr.com. You can also find me, Samantha Stark, on Twitter at SamanthaStark3. And you can find James on Twitter as well under James Spooky, spelled with an I-E, not A-Y. And you wanted it, you asked for it, you got it. You can also find us now on iTunes under, you guessed it, Not Another Podcast. We'll talk to you soon. Peace out, Not Another Podcasters.